Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the VBAC Link. I am so tickled today to welcome on some co-hosts. We have Paige and Lily with us today. You probably recognize their names because they've been in the family for a long time. And we're excited to hear their voices today on the podcast. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
I just cannot wait for today's episode. It's always so fun to have like collaboration within the conversation. And today we're going to be talking a lot about things that we're seeing in our community, common questions, giving you some directions on how to find really great resources that we're offering in addition to this podcast, and so much more. So let's get going. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Yay!
Okay, all right. So when we were looking through the VBAC Link community, which I'm just going to start right there, just in case you are listening and you don't know what that is, you can go on Facebook. We have a private community group forum where we have people like 23,000 plus people in there, which is crazy to think it's gotten that big. But we have this amazing community where people are asking questions every single day at all times of the day, sharing exciting stories or exciting things that have happened, big moments in their pregnancies, fears, lots of vulnerability in these groups. So we were looking through this group, and you can find it on Facebook at the VBAC Link community. And remember, VBAC is spelled VBAC for vaginal birth after cesarean. And then we actually have another group that a lot of people don't know about called the CBAC Link community, and that's CBAC Link community. So go on Facebook, find it, join it. You guys will not regret it. There's so many amazing things. But we were going through the whole thread a little bit and trying to kind of see some common things that are being said. And I feel like number one, I want to talk about induction. I'm going to read a post. There's like 5 posts, I swear, today. But this one says, I'm almost 39 weeks. And this is the message they sent me today. And it says, normally they were able to do induction. However, starting today, they changed all the guidelines for VBAC and were no longer able to induce for VBAC. So there's one. And then we have another one that's like, hey, I'm 37 weeks, really wanting to go into spontaneous labor. Doctor left me feeling very discouraged today at my appointment. Now saying my baby's big, I need to probably be induced. What can I do to self-induce? I mean, seriously, what are you guys see these posts all the time.
I mean, I'm literally scrolling because we got a DM today that was very similar, and it was like, "Can you induce for VBAC?" My doctor said you can't.
Yes. This one says 38 weeks, one day today, only 1 centimeter dilated with no effacement. Still have some time to avoid induction, but they're already talking about doing it around my due date.
Yeah, this one was a question that we got from Q&A, and it just says, "What is used to induce labor for a VBAC?" Because there's a
Yes.
lot of unknown.
There's a lot of unknown. And then it is really difficult when we have providers that are saying, we can induce, and then some providers saying we can't induce, some providers saying we have to induce. It's just like
It's
all over the
confusing.
board. It's so confusing. It is all over the board, and it's not fair. It's not fair because at the end of the day, we just want to do what's best for us and our baby. And when we have a provider, in Oklahoma saying that you can't, and then we have a provider in Texas saying that you can, and then a provider in California saying it's the only way I'll do it. It leaves for a lot of confusion. So let's talk about the methods. There's a lot of methods, like Lily was just saying. I think waiting and trying to do the best you can to self-induce in ways, like walking and yoga and hydrating and things like that. Those are all things that actually can bring on labor time, right?
Totally. Time. I think that's so important too, is because I think often we get messages of like, okay, I'm down to the wire. It's either a C-section or I go into labor. So what can I do? And we want this like, okay, I want to self-induce. And there are definitely things that encourage our body to get ready for labor. But at the end of the day, like there's nothing that you can do that's going to force your body into spontaneous labor either. And that goes for medical
No.
induction sometimes too. Like
Yep.
the science of what triggers labor is still unknown.
Unknown.
Like
Yeah, which is crazy.
like that's a reality. Like there's so much like that goes into it, nitty-gritty details of like what hormones are being released. Is your baby engaged in your pelvis? Like all of these different things. It's not just like, okay, great, I did the mile circuit and now I'm in labor. Hooray! And it's not as simple as like they hooked me up to Pitocin and I'm in labor. Hooray! Even in a medical setting, like induction sometimes doesn't force you into labor,
I
which
love
is
that you
best.
pointed that out because here we are, guys, we are in 2025 and we still really don't understand what all goes into play when labor starts to trigger labor. And so time is really at your best when it comes to self-inducing things. Like Lily was saying, you can do things that can try to encourage your body, but really, if your body's not ready, it's probably not going to do it. It's probably not going to go into labor. Or we like with medical inductions, we've seen it where we're forcing, and our body's like, I am not ready. I cannot do this. And then it retaliates, and we started getting swollen cervix or distress in baby or mom or things like that. So forcing our body to do something is not necessarily the right thing to always do, but we are left feeling pressure to do it. And that is what aggravates me a little bit in the medical world, because whether or not it's like medical induction, it's trying to induce naturally for ourselves, and naturally is in air quotes. So we can walk, we can hydrate. Sometimes just resting can also help our bodies. Our bodies really are so smart. And if they're tired, they might not go into labor even if you're wanting it to. So just resting. There are other things like membrane sweeps. You can get a membrane sweep. And it's interesting, out of all the years of being a doula, there was a midwife named Rebecca. She was crazy with herbs. She was like the herb queen. And I don't even know like what she ever gave her patients and my clients, but it always seemed to work. But she had like a hard line where she was like, if we're not here, I won't do it because it's showing your body's telling me it's not ready. And she said, if the body is not 2 to 3 centimeters dilated, like solid 2 to 3, right? So
progress and 70% effaced, and the cervix is not anterior, meaning it's not facing our back still, she won't even attempt any sort of or encourage any sort of like natural induction or self-induction.
And to that point, though, like your body isn't broken just because you're not dilated. Yet. Like, yep. I love that she's like, she has some guidelines, and I hope that our community doesn't hear that and be like, like that means that like something's wrong with me and I can't induce or I can't go into labor. I always say that dilation is not a prerequisite to a successful labor, you know, like there's also time, and this midwife is giving her clients time to allow the body to get to that space, which
I love. So many providers put that pressure on you. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, 37 weeks, let's just do a check and see where you are. Oh no, we are closed and high. Oh, this is bad. We need to get things going. But then we're not ready to get things
going. But we don't.
Yeah. Right. We just need the time. And so that's the other piece of it with the induction is a cervical check, the third trimester ultrasounds, those types of things you can see in the future what that might lead to if your provider is starting to suggest those things like those ultrasounds, asking for those checks. You can keep in your mind, okay, this might lead to an induction conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with Rebecca, she's a home birth midwife, but she would not even like attempt any of that until 41. She knows that the chances of being dilated at 37, 38, 39, even 40, even 41 weeks can be slim. I am a mama that my cervix does not dilate until I'm in labor. It just doesn't. And so if I was being told that information, I would probably be very, very stressed and overwhelmed and feel like my body's broken because it's not doing it. And as I look through all of these posts, I feel like that's probably where a lot of our community members are feeling. Like, I guess my body doesn't know how to work. Mm-hmm. When, again, it all comes back to, no, it does. It just needs time. And I've said this a long time ago. Like, we're not robots. We can't just, like, push a button and, like, tell our cervix, like, oh, dilate. Like, we don't just work as a robot. Like, we're all different, and it happens at all different times. And sometimes it's not until labor's really going. And sometimes, like my sister-in-law, she'll walk around at 6 centimeters. I was always so jealous of her. I'm like, holy cow, she's 6 centimeters and not even contracting. Like, how, you know? And not even in labor at all. But that doesn't...
And it doesn't necessarily mean that she's necessarily ahead, right? Like, she'd be 6 centimeters and then still have a really long labor to get all the way to 10. Like, there's no... Like, a cervical check is a snapshot of that moment. Yep. It is not there's a no predictor of how fast your labor will go, when your labor will start, like, all of those things. And so it's so frustrating to see providers, like, put that pressure onto patients. But can we talk a little bit about, Megan, what happens then if there is a medical reason to induce?
Yes.
Because some people are being told that they can't induce, but what if they have something, like they're having high blood pressure, they have a reason that baby needs to come out, and then they're left with no options. Like, how does someone navigate that?
Yeah. And so that is something I was going to mention too, is like, really, if someone's pushing induction, don't be scared to ask, is there a medical reason for this induction? Mm-hmm. Is there a real medical reason? Because 9 times out of 10, there probably isn't. But then there are those opportunities or chances where there truly is a medical reason to get a baby out, whether it's preeclampsia or whatnot. So what are the options? We could start with that cervical sweep, but sometimes a cervical sweep isn't going to be fast enough when we have a medical reason for induction. And so we might be going in, and I want to give like a couple scenarios. One, where we're not dilated at all, because that can happen. And a lot of providers say, oh, you're not dilated at all, there's nothing I can do for you, which is false. So we can still give Pitocin. Pitocin isn't going to just like dilate you. It's definitely going to take some time. With being a TOLAC, the trial of labor after cesarean, meaning you've had one or more previous cesareans, and you're going for a trial of labor is what they call it, or you're saying a VBAC, they can't use things like misoprostols, like Cytotec and things like that. I mean, they can, but they don't. It definitely increases chances of uterine rupture by like 6% or something. So a lot higher, right? But things like a Foley catheter and Pitocin, so they can do a really slow dose of Pitocin. We actually have a story on our podcast of a mom that's how she started, with a little dose of Pitocin, just enough to soften the cervix up. And then they were able to do a Foley catheter or a Cook catheter into the cervix, which is a balloon that mechanically dilates the cervix. It puts pressure just like a baby's head on the cervix and mechanically dilates it. And then they kept Pitocin with that. And that ended up being like a really great situation. There's also AROM, so artificial rupture of membranes, where they break your water. Weirdly enough, like sometimes I think people look at me like, what? Why would you say this? But I actually would suggest Pitocin to start over breaking the water.
Mm-hmm.
But totally. Like, what do you guys think as doulas?
And like baby's position, right? Like if you're at a negative station, like we should not be touching your water.
Why are we opening the floodgates and having opportunity for malposition or longer, especially if we're inducing for a medical reason? A lot of the times that is an earlier gestational period. And so the body needs time to like really warm up and decide, oh, okay, fine, I'll respond to this. And so it can be longer, which we know the longer the water is broken, the more pressure infection and things like that. So I would opt probably for Pitocin and a Foley over starting with my water broken, personally.
Yeah.
Agreed. I agree. So Megan, that episode, I don't know if this is one you're talking about, but this is my very favorite episode on medical induction. It's episode 172, Carly. She had cholestasis. And her first birth, what I love about it so much is her first birth and her second birth were basically the same in it, not birth, but pregnancy and situation with cholestasis. And she had an induction with both, if I recall. But the second time, she was 37 weeks, 0 centimeters high, like 0% dilated. And she walks through that whole process and it was a successful VBAC. Just with that, with the mechanical, with the Pitocin, very, very patient. Yes. And it shows the difference of how a team can approach
induction.
Yeah. And I think that if you have history of preeclampsia, cholestasis, any, you know, HELLP syndrome, anything that may cause concern for induction in the future for the next pregnancy, I think a detailed conversation with your provider early on about this is so key, because honestly, it's going to let you know a lot about what that provider's thoughts are on induction. And it can kind of like prepare you to know what to expect or alert you and be like, ooh, I might not be with the right provider. I might need to start exploring things, versus being in that state of like, oh my gosh, we need to get this baby here now, today, we have to start this, and you're just feeling overwhelmed. So yeah, I think having that conversation, like what methods do you use? How do you support VBAC? How patient are you, right? Because slow and steady is really important with VBAC. But there are a lot of times where providers are like, well, we can't just go slow. Like if you're going to commit, you got to commit. And, you know, I don't know if you have heard these things as a doula, but like, if you're going to make the commitment, we got to commit and we got to keep going. And they're like literally snapping their fingers, like, we got to go, we got to go. And it's like, but we don't, like, let's take a step back. Let's slow it down and let's try to encourage the body to do something it wasn't ready to do, but we need it to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And the slower it goes, sometimes I feel like the body just warms up and isn't like, holy cow, and like throws the wall up, you know? Totally. Like if someone comes after you and they're like just attacking you and you're like, whoa, your body's natural response is to like fight. And if we're just like plowed through with Pitocin right off the bat, or our water breaks and then we're just like getting Pitocin every 30 minutes, every 2 to 4 milliliters, our body's response is like, hold on, what's going on? And it might not respond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right?
I also want to bring up one other induction method. We don't talk about this all the time because it's not always available in the United States, but Dilipan is an option too.
Yes.
And those are rods that are inserted into the cervix and they absorb cervical fluid. And so they do like a softer dilation. And from my understanding, it can be done even if you are 0% dilated.
Dilated.
Mm-hmm. So it is an option. It's not always available everywhere, but I'm hearing it more and more from our community of like, what about Dilipan? My provider said that I could try that. And I was like, that's a great option if it's available.
Yeah. It's interesting how the U.S. is slowly coming around to things that outside of the U.S., you know, other countries are doing, but it works. It works. Yeah. Oh, I also wanted to mention that, like, a lot of people are scared of Pitocin increasing chances of uterine rupture because it does increase a little bit, like 1.1%, right? So we're looking at uterine ruptures between like 0.4 to like 1% just in general. So pretty small. And so with a Pitocin increase of like 1.1%, it's very slow, but it can increase your chances a little bit. But again, going back to what we were just saying, if we're nice and slow and nice and controlled, it's pretty low, you guys. The chances are pretty low. And something that I actually just saw the other day, or maybe today, I think it was the other day in the community, is how high can Pitocin go for EBAC?
I saw that too.
And as a doula, so I've been working since 2014 as a doula, so quite a few years. And I have seen it go over 20, but pretty rarely that it doesn't go over 20. And if it goes over 20, they usually place an IUPC, which is an intrauterine pressure catheter, because they really, and an FSC typically, they really want to monitor and test the Montevideo units, the MVUs, to see if the labor is like adequate, the contractions are adequate. Cause you can be at 20 milliliters of Pitocin and actually still not have adequate contractions. And you have to have adequate contractions to have progress. And so if you're in labor and you're being induced with Pitocin, and they could even just feel really, really strong, but they're still not adequate internally causing change, you can have that conversation. If they're like maxed out at 20, you can say, hey, an IUPC and FSC, they also come with risks of like infection, and they can increase chances of cesarean. But you can say something like that, like, hey, can we check my MVUs and make sure that my labor pattern is adequate to make change before we just deem me failure to progress? Because a lot of providers will cap out at 20 and say your failure to progress, nothing's happening. So I wanted to mention that because I did see that, and I don't feel like we talk about that a lot, like how they can increase and how high. So yeah.
Let's talk more on choline for a moment. The RDA is 450 to 550 milligrams while pregnant and nursing. Though research suggests that upwards of 900 milligrams in pregnancy supports optimal perinatal and infant health outcomes, most prenatal vitamins contain 1/10 or less of the RDA. As choline is a bulky nutrient, and manufacturers often don't want to increase the number of capsules per serving. Choline supports the baby's brain and cognitive development during pregnancy and after birth. Choline can be found through food sources like eggs and liver, which is amazing, but more often than not, it's harder to get the full amount that we need on a daily basis. Needed has created an amazing option for when or if you need to supplement, so you can do so with ease and confidence that you're getting the choline needed. Their choline add-on is dosed at 500 milligrams of choline chloride per capsule to help you reach your optimal levels. This is a form that can be used in research for optimal outcomes in mothers and their babies. Find prenatal choline and more information about choline on episode 406 and at thisisneeded.com, and enjoy 20% off your first order with code VBAC.
All right. What else do we want to talk on, ladies?
Something that I see often is, oh gosh, I have two. I don't know what to do. Ah, okay. I'm going to go with one and then we can talk about the other later. Something that I see a lot of is people asking for, okay, do you have an episode about this? Do you have more information about, like, just what we were talking about? Do you have more information about induction? Do you have more information about XYZ thing? And I think that sometimes our community forgets that we've been around the block for a while and we have a lot of resources that are already out there. And like, I totally get the like human connection piece of wanting to hear from one of us. But if you're looking for those things, they exist. We have a blog, we have the podcast, obviously, and both of those things are places that you can search by keyword. So on the blog, if you go to thevbacklink.com/blog, there's a search feature. And so I would keep your searches simple, but they exist. So you can search induction. We have a whole blog about all the different induction methods. You can search for, I'm trying to think of common ones that I look up. I probably could type it into my phone and it's like 40, in my recently searched.
Yeah, like 40 induction, weeks. Yep. 40 weeks. Let's see, VBA 2C, VBA 3C, like multiple cesareans. Let's see some other uterine rupture. Common.
Oh yeah, how to understand it.
How That's to understand a great one. Uterine rupture. How long to wait?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I think I'm trying to remember what I type into the
blog. Laboring at home.
Laboring
safely.
At home. Yep.
That's a big one.
Epidural. That's another common one that is asked about and easy to search. Epidural. Supportive providers.
Mm-hmm.
Learning truly who is supportive or not, because
and questions to ask them,
questions and to red ask flags. Them. Yep, red flags. So we have, you guys, I mean, seriously, we have so many blogs, so many blogs. Yeah, like laboring at home, tips for VBAC, trying to think some of the other things. Nutrition
there's a lot.
Facts. Like,
yes. There are literally over 150 blogs. I was shocked. Yeah. I went through and counted. I was like, whoa, I didn't realize we had that many. And we have over 400 podcast episodes.
Totally.
Yes.
There's like a wealth of knowledge. I will say, if you're searching for a podcast episode, I do this all the time. It cracks me up because people are like, can you give me a podcast episode? And I'm like, yes, I'm doing the exact same thing that you would. And I'm searching by keyword. But I find that they're easier to search actually in Spotify. I get the best hits from their search engine. And if you're in it, it's a little bit complicated to get to search within the episode. So you have to search the episode first. I'm going to do it while I tell you. You have to find the episode first. And then you pull down from the top once you're on our episode page, and there's a button that says find in this show. And that's where you can search by keyword. So if you're looking for, like today I was looking for breach episodes for someone. So you type in breach and it has every episode that has breach in the title is going to come up. And I find that it just searches better in Spotify. Like more episodes come up. It has a better search engine than Apple does, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And Fusebox on the vbacklink.com. It's not amazing, but you can go there. So I typically go to Spotify too. And I do the same thing when they're like, hey, do you have an episode for this? And I will say, Paige is like so good because she's been transcribing these episodes for so many years. So she like really knows the episodes, but I still have to, even recording them, I still have to go back and search like breach or supportive provider or.
And it's funny because I still have to search them in order to link them for people. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I like know what episode I'm looking for. Like there's a couple I can think of in my head, like Dr. Kendra, she had a short interval VBAC. So I look for that one a lot. I look for Olga's breach story a lot. There's a couple, like some with like gestational diabetes or things like that. So there's Dr. common Fox. Ones that I, yeah. Yeah. So good. So good. So we have like so many resources available and that's like not even to add on to like our course. Like we have a whole course for parents too, you know? And so like, if you don't want to search by keyword and you don't even know where to start, like that is really, that's the place to start truly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we also have a doula directory. A lot of people are always like, I really want to hire a doula, but don't know where to start. These doulas are VBAC certified and trained. They understand VBAC. They understand what you're going through as someone wanting a VBAC. Mm-hmm. Or someone, you know, as someone who's not sure what they want. Like if they want a repeat cesarean or not, like, or, you know, to go in for an elective, like it's difficult. And these doulas are really understanding and know what you're going through and have learned a lot. So yeah, I mean, the vbacklink.com is where you can find a lot of these, but these resources are all over the place in our community. We also have a provider list. Can we talk about where they can find that?
Yes.
That's a big question. I feel like we get every single day, multiple times.
Yes. Supportive provider list is not on our website because it is it's a Google sheet. So it does not live on our website. So you can find it in really two places. The first is the link in our bio in our Instagram. It is linked in our bio at all times, even in our like our about you in our bio. It says supportive provider list. There's two little arrows pointing down. So supportive provider list is there. And it is also in the featured posts on our in our private Facebook community. So if you've been around the block for a while, we did used to have a like PDF'd version that was in the files of our group that has been archived, and we've updated it so that it is a living document and it is able to be added to, or if a provider retires, we can make that change so it's a living document. So it's in the featured posts on our Facebook community and the link in our bio on social media.
Yeah, and I wanted to point out, a lot of people kind of ask like where we've gotten these providers and if we vet every provider because they want to know. Let me just tell you though, you guys, there are three people in three different states. We can't travel the world to confirm that these providers are actually supportive. And so these are providers that have been given from our community members who have had wonderful experiences and have believed that they are supportive in feedback. And so we've added them to the list. But again, I feel like it's really important to do your research, understand, interview, learn the questions, check out our blog or check out our course. We talk all about how to find a supportive provider. And we can talk a little bit about that too, but do your research and really understand if that provider is supportive for you. Mm-hmm. Because I will also say, like, my provider that was supportive might not be the right provider for Paige or Lily.
Totally.
You know? And so we might turn around and say, that they're not supportive, but really they were supportive for that other provider. We just have to find the right provider for us. So we at the VBAC Link have not vet every single provider. It's just physically impossible for us to do.
Yeah. And there is a notes section on the list. So whoever submitted them, if they had any specific notes or like things that they know about that provider, like we'll do VBAC, but not VBA2C. Things like that, those are in those notes. So anything that we know about those providers is on the list. We don't know anything other than that. We've not like personally contacted them. And I have had a couple of people reach out and be like, oh, I didn't like that provider. You should take them off your list. And we are going to keep them on the list because at the end of the day, someone did have a VBAC with them and had a good experience. And so just to Megan's point of they're not going to be the right provider for everyone. I don't think there is a provider that is universally the right provider for every single person. We all come in with our own levels of risk tolerance, our levels of intervention tolerance, and like what we hope for in our own labors. And so just knowing that it's on you to find the provider that is the best fit for you.
And that is not easy. I was thinking about this the other day. How do you really know if your provider is the right one? Because like we were talking about, they can be correct on paper. They can check all the boxes and you can still feel unsettled. And maybe that's anxiety. When I was preparing for my VBA2C baby, I felt that unsettled feeling, but I didn't know if it was anxiety or if it was a red flag or what. And so I stayed with those providers and I didn't realize until the next birth when I had a provider that I didn't feel that unsettled feeling with, that maybe I should have gone back and interviewed a little bit more, even though I did interview around and I was very, very thorough, but I didn't have that safety because I didn't realize until I had continuity of care with one provider that that was what I needed. And the previous practice was a midwife group. And I had that unsettled feeling, I think, because I didn't really know who was going to be there during my birth. So looking back then with my fourth baby that I just had in the fall, it was one provider, continuity of care. I was anxious about other things, but never about my provider. And they say when you get married, right? Or like when you find your person, you know. Yeah. And it's that. It's that, I'm not anxious. I just feel at peace. I feel settled. I don't know if that's how you ladies felt, but
exactly how I felt.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, I mean, I said this on my episode talking about my birth story, but I remember I interviewed a birth center, which everything on paper, right? Like that's exactly what I wanted. I didn't want to be in a hospital, all of these things. And I interviewed my midwife that I ended up going with. And I told my husband, like, I'm scared I'm going to love her. And then I'm going to have a hospital birth. Because I was so stuck on the like where I was going to give birth instead of feeling safe. And I immediately, like when I met my midwife, I was like, oh, I love you. Okay, I guess I'm having a hospital birth because I adore you and I feel safe with you. And like all of this is going well. I feel held, you know, and seen, and not just like another checkbox for you either, you know? So it's nuanced is the conversation with a provider, and it's hard. And I think it's okay to be brave and change providers too. You know, that takes a whole other level.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. Like, to your point, I found a provider that felt wonderful. Wonderful. I was like, yep, he is it. He is all the thing. And then mid-pregnancy, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Ooh, something's irking me in my body to change. And I did. And it was the best decision ever. It was the best decision I could have done. And that's hard too. That's really, really hard. And that sometimes I feel like changing providers, it's weird. It's like overwhelming and we feel like we can't. And like,
like you're disappointing the provider somehow. Yeah. Or you have to tell them, or it's a breakup.
That's how I felt. I was like, I feel like I'm cheating, like by breaking up or like leaving if I don't say, you know, it was just like weird. And you don't even have to say anything to your provider. If it's not feeling right, it's not feeling right. You can go to your new provider, request them to get your records, and all just move on. Like, never even see that provider again. But like Paige was saying, like, you have to have that provider that helps you feel safe and loved and supported. Because if you don't, there's something in our bodies that happen. Like, we're pushing back. And sometimes I feel like we settle, and I know that sometimes we have to settle because we may have found the most supportive provider in our area possible. So we feel like we're settling. I don't feel like we should have to settle, but I understand that it's not cut and dry sometimes. It's not black and white. But yeah, like, tune into those things. Do you feel safe? Do you feel supportive? Even if that means it's not the location you thought you were going to give birth at, you know?
I was just going to say, I think that's where like having a doula is helpful too, especially if you're finding yourself quote unquote settling of like, then like also build your birth team. Like, you have power to build your birth team and to build the people that you are inviting into your space and who are going to be like a level of barrier for you in those moments and fight for your hopes and desires. And I think that husbands and partners are amazing, but it's also their birth experience, right? And so there's a there's a value in having somebody else in the room that is not a parent of this baby that is being born, that is not as emotionally tied to this scenario, and that has experience in speaking up to a provider and saying like, hey, that's not on their birth plan. That's not where we're going. Or can we wait? Can we have time? Can we use that brains tool that we talk about sometimes? Like, I think that sometimes doulas are often discounted as like, well, I have an awesome partner and I bet that you do. Like, I have no doubt that you do. And I still think that a doula is a valuable addition to your birth team, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Paige even had a doula with her maternal assisted cesarean, right, yeah. Paige?
Yeah, absolutely. Lily, we're on the same wavelength. That's exactly what I was going to say. Doulas, that leads right into the conversation about doulas, where, yes, the doula is the person that you can pick, even if you can't pick a provider, you don't have access to a provider that you want or feel maybe 100%, right? And I see posts too, do I have to have a doula to have a VBAC? The answer is no.
No.
Do you have to earn your VBAC by doing all these things, paying for a chiropractor, paying for pelvic floor if that's not covered by your insurance or whatever? No. But if you do invest in these things, it can make a difference. It can change an outcome. And it can, whether the outcome is a vaginal delivery or a cesarean, personally, it can make a difference between a traumatic experience or not. And with hiring a doula, this is something that I learned over the course of my four babies. Hire a doula, not just for the sake of hiring a doula, but hire the right one. Because in the same light of your provider, if you don't feel safe with your doula, if your doula is not offering what you need as far as maybe communication or Lily put this really, really well in a comment in the Facebook group that summarized what a doula does so well. You are so good with words. And I just like praise hands to Lily all the time. But she said, doulas are your informational, physical, and emotional support. And I'm like stealing that for everything because that summarizes it so well. If your doula hits that informational piece that you need, you feel like they provide you with all, with getting that on top of your own research, the physical, they're capable of supporting you physically, and you feel comfortable with their knowledge and their background that way, little tools and tricks that they have and that they're offering you, and you feel confident that they will bring that to your birth space, and then emotionally, that you feel also safe, because anybody coming into your birth space will change the dynamic. Your photographer too. When I had Julie at my birth, that's what I learned. I was like, oh my gosh, the photographer makes a difference. And the energy that she brought, I needed. And the warmth that my doula brought, I needed. And what your provider brings, the emotional safety in that way, you need for their medical knowledge and what you, anyway, that's my piece about doulas.
I love doulas so much, and I didn't have a doula until my VBAC after 2 C-section birth, and literally, like, my husband, who was totally against a doula with my second, the one that I wanted to VBAC with after my first C-section, I mean, seriously, you guys, we got in an argument at dinner, like, out to dinner. We're, like, arguing in a booth about hiring a doula and him being replaced. Like, I will never forget that day. And I will also never forget the day that we came home from the birth center with my son and him saying, holy cow, if we ever did that again, which he made very strongly clear that we would not, but if we ever did that again, we would never do that any other way. And holy cow, I love your doulas. And I'm like, yeah, I know. They're pretty great, huh? And he was like, I love them and I can't believe that we didn't have them before. And he apologized to me. But really, like, they make such a difference, not even just for us giving birth, but also our partners. Like, he felt so supported. He was able to, like, get lunch and not have to worry about, like, how I was doing. It was just so great. And they were able to guide him in the ways that he needed to be supportive, because with our second baby, he was just kind of, like, shoved in the corner and not really talked to and didn't really know anything to do, you know, to help. And I feel like our partners are so vulnerable too, because they want to help us and they want to support us, but they don't know how, and doulas can. But I also want to point out too that sometimes I see people hiring doulas and then they don't feel like they have to do any supervision or research because they hired a doula. And as a doula, I can just say that that's not something I would encourage. I don't know how you guys see. Paige is shaking her head like, nope, I don't encourage that either. But like, you still have to take charge and ownership of your birth, and you can't totally put it in a doula's hand because they have the education and knowledge.
Totally. A doula is not a replacement for like birth education. If you've never taken a birth education course, like, that matters, knowing what's going to happen, knowing what to expect. It's something I require of my clients, that they have to take a birth course. Because it's there's like such a difference in someone that goes into birth understanding what to expect. You don't have to be an expert and you don't have to like remember every position change. Like, that is what your doula is for. But yeah, and then to the point of like, a doula is never going to replace your partner. Like, we physically cannot replace the oxytocin that your partner provides to you, right? Like, your partner is your person. They're your oxytocin. Mm-hmm. I can love you so much, but I'm never going to be your oxytocin hit, you know? Yeah. So I think that preparation matters. And I love what Paige said of like, you don't have to earn your VBAC. Nobody here is saying that there is that every single thing is necessary. Certainly there are restraints with like your budget, with what you are or are not able to do. And I think that just like with an intervention, you would weigh the risks and the benefits to something. And so think about that when you're thinking about chiropractic care, when you're thinking about pelvic floor PT. You know, there may be scenarios in which you can't do all, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we do think that you should do some, even if some is like, you read a book, you took a birth class, you hired a doula, like, find some way in which that you can feel empowered and prepared and not just walk in being like, well, hope that works out for me.
Yeah.
Because it might. People walk into hospitals and sometimes they have wonderful birth experiences. No doubt. No doubt.
Yes.
But your preparation matters.
Yeah, it's not impossible to not do anything and go have an amazing birth. Like, it's not. But, you know, the grand scheme of things, if you look at it at the end, like, your preparation, your knowledge, your understanding, it's going to help you navigate your birth in a positive way. Yeah. And even if something's happening that's not ideal or not something you're wanting, if you have the education and you know the pros and cons of those decisions that maybe you're being asked to make, you feel and you are in the driver's seat of your birth in a way and are able to make decisions for yourself. And I full on believe that it helps our postpartum mental state later on. Rather than just walking in saying, well, whatever happens, happens. Like, yes, you can do that, but it's not always ideal. And it may impact us later on. Sorry, guys. Got on a little soapbox.
I love a Megan soapbox. That's why I started listening to the VBAC link.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Julie and I seriously could get on so many soapboxes. But, yeah, prepping matters. Education matters. And, you know, like Lily said, like, you don't have to take 50 different courses, or you don't have to read 100 books or listen to every podcast, but doing some of that work also puts ownership for you. Like, you are dedicating some, you know, you're getting being dedicated to yourself in this situation.
And find what's doable. Like, you know, maybe you can't read the book, but can you have one AirPod in and like listen to the VBAC link while you make dinner? Can you like find the ways in which you can access something? If it feels overwhelming, you don't have to do everything. Pick one thing and stick with it. Maybe pick one thing every trimester, you know, something that you can do. But I think this leads into one of the other things I wanted to talk about, which is a lot of people reach out to us wanting like a prescription for VBAC. They want a like, okay, so how many chiropractic visits do I need to go to? And what spinning babies exercises do I need to do? And then how many contractions should I do this position for? And so like all of it ends up tied up in a pretty bow, and that's a VBAC. And the answer is that doesn't exist.
I wish so badly that I could give you guys like a prescription and say, this is exactly what you do. I really do.
Yeah. Right? Me too. Yeah. But I think, and I see that a lot in Q&A too, of like people wanting to know like their odds of having a VBAC, and I'm putting that in air quotes. And then they tell me a very specific scenario. They're like, okay, so my first birth, I had cholestasis, and then I had a premature rupture of membranes, and then I pushed for 2 hours, but baby wasn't descending and he wasn't tolerating labor. And so I had a C-section. What are my odds of having a VBAC? And just like there's not a prescription for labor, there's not a perfect calculator for a VBAC. No matter how much a provider tries to throw around that there is a VBAC calculator.
Oh my gosh. Did you see the other day in the community that said that they will no longer allow them to have a VBAC or even try for a TOLAC if they don't have a 70% chance or something like that? Or higher? Have you seen that?
Yes, I saw that today. Maybe, and it's like, it red flag, red flag.
Yes.
Not evidence-based.
Run away.
What? I was like, why are we using this calculator to tell people, no.
A calculator can never, possibly ever, go into the depth of what your birth experience was like and spit out a number that tells you this is your chances of actually having a VBAC.
No.
Absolutely not. And we can't do it either.
Yeah, I was just saying, we can't do it either. You guys, in a perfect world, we could have that prescription and we could tell you your exact odds, but we can't. We can give you information. We can give you stats. We can give you suggestions. We can help you find supportive providers. We can help you find a great doula. We can give you that knowledge in your pack, but we can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. And there are people that go and do everything and still maybe don't get their VBAC. And then there's an unknown reason. Like, sometimes we just don't know why. Why didn't it work out? I did everything. And that can feel very defeating as, you know, someone who did everything and they still didn't get it. But again, it comes down to do the best things you can.
And I think one of the things to do is to work through the what if it doesn't happen? And I know that that's not, I know for me personally, when I would listen to the VBAC link at post my cesarean, I would avoid episodes about repeat cesareans. I would avoid episodes about hospital births because I didn't want to have a hospital VBAC. And I like wouldn't listen because I just wanted to ignore that that was even a possibility. And if I look back on it, I think, gosh, how traumatized would I have been if I had not had a VBAC, you know? And I had to process it a little bit when my daughter was breech for a hot second. And it was like, okay, I think she was breech because I needed to be forced into some like, what does a redemptive birth experience look like regardless of the outcome of my birth? And that is so freaking hard to have to address, but it is part of VBAC planning. And if you hold yourself back and you put your trauma in a box, your trauma will come unpacked throughout your birth and postpartum experience, regardless of how it goes, you know? Yeah. I'm sure Paige can probably speak to this way more than I could. But.
Well, women of strength, your worth is not tied to an outcome, a birth outcome. Please do not tie your personal worth to your VBAC. That will result in trauma, and also you will find that your VBAC won't fix that. Like, your VBAC will be redemptive, but you will still have probably some sticky things within your VBAC story that you will have to process, because that is just how birth goes. Now, when we're talking about this prep, the prep matters because our mission is better birth after a cesarean. And most of us listening to the podcast, we're steamrolled in some way or another by an experience that we did not anticipate and are processing some sort of trauma through that experience. So by doing these things, you take back that control in ways that you can. You take back your power. You set yourself up for a more empowered experience. You find your worth again through that journey. And that's why we love VBAC so much. That's why I love VBAC so much, even though I never got one. Because I hear stories of these women taking back their power. And that's why we advocate for any type of outcome, an empowering cesarean, an empowering repeat cesarean, an empowering CBAC, an empowering VBAC. That's what we are championing, because that's what will change you and transform you. And like Megan was saying, set you up better for postpartum, make you feel like you can do this motherhood thing, and we're in it with you.
I love that so much. We are in it with you guys. We are here for you. We love you. I know I've said this on the podcast where I'm like, I know, I don't even know you. I might not even know your name or anything about your history, but I love you. And I can't explain it enough. Like, we love this community so much, and we want the best for you, no matter what that birth outcome looks like. And like Paige said, it does not define you. And you know, we talked about that. I think we did like a cesarean awareness month. Like, birth does not define you. It doesn't say what you're worth or who you are or what you're capable of or if you failed or if you didn't fail. Or it's just not. This is not true. This is not true. You are an amazing person. You are a woman of strength, and you are capable of doing so much no matter what type of birth outcome happens.
Yeah, that's so good. I love that. I have one more thing I want to talk about we have a hot
Let's
second.
Do it. We do.
One
Let's
more
do
thing.
It.
And that is, I am new to the VBAC link. Where do I start? And the answer is, there's a button on our Instagram.
There is a button.
Start here. And there's one that says VBAC 101. So if you're looking for, like, I don't even know, like, I'm supposed to interview providers. That's new to me. I'm supposed to, like, find a doula. What's a doula? If you're wondering those things and you're like, I feel like I have no base knowledge. I'm not sure what this TOLAC VBAC, like, what do those mean? I don't know what those things stand for. The basics is in those two highlights, the start here and the VBAC 101. We've created like a space for you to come and to start, and nobody expects you to be an expert.
No, seriously. I think there's so many people that are like, wait, VBAC, TOLAC. And there's so many acronyms, and then like you said, the provider and doula and what are the risks, and whoa, it's all so much. There's a lot that goes in with VBAC, and that's why we have over 100 blogs, you guys, because there's a lot of information and ground to cover. But starting at that 101 and getting just like, I don't know, your feet wet a little bit and understanding a little bit more about what VBAC is and why we're here, I think that is such a great place to start. And you can find us pretty much everywhere. I would say we're probably most active on Instagram and then the VBAC Link community on Facebook, but the VBAC Link is everywhere. You can truly find us everywhere.
We even have
TikTok.
a TikTok. Come
Yeah.
hang out with us on TikTok. People are not nice on TikTok.
I
I've just learned. I've
know.
learned this recently. I feel like Instagram is like you all have found us on Instagram. You are people. We're here. We're with you. And then like we started posting on TikTok and like people just they don't know. They don't know who we are. They're not integrated into the like we're not just VBAC people. Like we have a team of people that are not all VBAC moms. Like we love birth and we love positive outcomes and we love empowered experiences that feel safe and that you feel held, you know? And so come hang out with us on TikTok and be nice to us.
Yeah, please be nice. But yeah, it's kind of interesting, the community
It's a different
difference.
vibe.
Yeah, it's TikTok is definitely a different vibe. We also have YouTube. We haven't recently been posting these episodes on YouTube, but we're hoping to get those back up so you can also potentially listen on YouTube or the podcast. But we have some really cool things like fear clearing, baby positioning, and things like that on YouTube. Some fun videos, so you can also check that out.
I do need to fix that our somehow our breach video on YouTube is not our breach video. So I'm gonna
Oh.
try to fix that. So if you're looking for a breach video, it's pinned to our reels on Instagram. There's a movement for VBAC. There's a how to flip a breach baby. The videos are pinned to our reels section. If you find it on YouTube, it's not the right video. I
Okay.
don't know how that
Interesting.
happened, but just so you know.
We'll change it. We'll change it. And then also talking about Instagram even more. You guys, we have been doing Q&As for a really, really long time, and Lily's been phenomenal at keeping them up and answering your guys' questions like on a weekly basis or every other week basis. So there's a ton of highlights on Instagram where you can go and find a lot of common questions or kind of read things that people are saying and asking. I think that's another really great place to start.
Yeah, we've created a lot, is the moral of
Yeah.
the story.
There's a lot.
And
Yes.
hopefully this episode is helpful in like, how do I navigate all of that? Like, where do I find, you know, the things? So you can't
Yeah.
search by keyword on Instagram, but that those two start here 101 and like the Q&A highlights is a great place to start.
Yes. And then I'm going to drop this here. Eventually, it's going to not be like live anymore, but this is the second day in September, and all month this September, it's Labor Day month. We have a 20% coupon for our course, for our online course. So you can type in Labor Day Love, I think is what it is. Actually, nope. Labor Day Prep. It's Labor Day Prep. Labor Day Prep, all one word, and get 20% off your online course.
Okay. And that's for doulas too. Yes, it'll work on the doula
Yes.
course.
Any of our online courses. P.S. Yes, great thing to mention. We also have a doulas course who are listing to get, looking to get certified and on the listing. So that will work for doulas too. Yep. Labor Day Prep. So. Hey, anything else you guys want to mention or have seen that you feel like our community needs to know? I mean, I know we could probably talk for hours and hours and hours because there's so many things. Anything else? Nope.
I'm good for today.
Okay. All right, you guys. Well, until next time, we'll see you later. And let us know if you guys have any other questions. You can email us at info@thebacklink.com or on our social media pages. We are happy to answer them and help you if you are having a hard time navigating or finding those links that we're mentioning. We can also have them in the show notes here today. Okay, see you guys later.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link
actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.